Welcome to episode 5 of the Fredcast. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to the Fredcast. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, I've got a lot of news to share with you. Following the news, I've got a couple of features. The main feature this week: how to train for your first century. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to the Fredcast. Sorry it's been so long since we've put one of these out. I promise to try to make these more regular and do them every 7 days, so it truly is a weekly podcast. But right now, let's get right back to the news, because there is a lot to cover. The first thing I want to mention is that apparently a lot of bike shops have been noticing spoke failures on new bicycles, and specifically bicycles costing up to about $600 from brand names such as Fuji, Giant, Jamus, Pacific Cycle, Raleigh, Specialized, Trek, and others. Now, Bicycle Retailer and Industry News, which is a industry-specific publication for manufacturers, distributors, and retailers, has been reporting on this. And apparently the problem is that spokes on brand new bikes are starting to break in the middle of the spokes, or they're starting to rust. It's believed that the problem here is that cost-cutting by a Korean company resulted in substandard wire being supplied to spoke manufacturers. Now, according to Bicycle Retailer, tests show that the spokes have nickel and molybdenum contents far below normal levels. The faulty spokes may have an N, as in November, a Z, as in Zulu, or S, as in Sierra, stamped into the round head, or they may have no insignia at all. Real helpful, right? If you have a 2004 or 2005 bike in which the spokes began rusting or breaking, check with the shop where you bought it, because it's quite possible that you might be able to get that wheel rebuilt, and then the shop can go back to the manufacturer for restitution. Now, what's interesting about this is I was leading a training ride back in August, and there was a woman on the ride. She was a fairly new rider. She had a brand new bike. And it was one of these brands that's mentioned in the Bicycle Retailer article. And we had only gone maybe 10, 15 miles at the most when all of a sudden she broke a spoke. And it seemed really strange to me that that would happen. In retrospect, I'm wondering whether or not hers was one of the bikes that was involved in this story that Bicycle Retailer is mentioning. All I can tell you is that obviously she wasn't injured, thank goodness. And that's definitely ended her ride for the day. And This got me thinking. There's probably a lot of you out there that went out and bought bikes in the last couple of years, and you expect that it's a new bike, new components. You shouldn't have these problems. So definitely have your bikes checked out, because I've been in the situation where I've been on a long ride out in the middle of nowhere. I've broken a spoke or two, and it's no fun having to pick up that cell phone and call for somebody to pick you up because you broke some spokes. So definitely have your bikes checked out. And in additional product news, you may remember that last week I brought you the news that Cintace was recalling some of its handlebar stems. This week I found some information that Cirrata Competition Bicycles, the high-end bicycle and component manufacturer, is issuing not a recall, but what they're calling a proactive structural alert. And this has to do with their handlebar stems called the STS titanium stems. Apparently, Cirrata is looking for its customers to inspect the stem welds of these stems for any signs of hairline cracks. And in addition, customers are asked to conduct a bending and a twisting test to check for any unusual cracking or creaking sounds. They're saying if you find any evidence of cracks or creaking, you should immediately discontinue use of the stem and send it back to Cirrata for, hopefully, replacement. Basically, they say that there are a few thousand stems, STS stems, produced between 95 and 98, and only a couple have been returned showing signs of fatigue. But basically, as a precautionary measure, and because they don't want people injured with these things, they're asking you to perform these tests. Now, I've put a link in the show notes to the Cirrata website, and once you're there, you can click on the link for the proactive structural alert regarding these stems. And in that alert, what you're going to find is they're going to prescribe three individual tests and inspections that you need to perform. One is a bending test, another is a twisting test, and the final one is a visual inspection. And they're basically saying that all cyclists should conduct visual inspections of their equipment from time to time, which hopefully you're all doing. But at least they're saying every 500 miles, or especially immediately after a crash. So we appreciate them for giving us that piece of advice. Go to Sirota's website. If you've got one of these stems, check out the test, perform the test. If you're not comfortable performing the test, or you're not entirely sure what you're seeing or what you're hearing, call Sirota. Talk to the people there about this, with their proactive structural alert. And if you're really not sure, go see your independent bike dealer. Have them check it out for you. Okay, on to a little racing news this week. Last week, if you listened to the Fredcast, you may recall that I told you that Lance Armstrong predicted Jan Ulrich would win this year's Tour de France. Well, this week, Belgian cycling legend Eddy Merckx has joined Lance Armstrong in a growing chorus of experts tipping Jan Ulrich as the favorite for this year's Tour de France. In an interview on Sunday, Merckx said that Ulrich would definitely be the man to beat come July. He said, quote, "This year belongs to Ulrich." He was interviewed in Agence France-Presse, and he said further, quote, "He's decided to compete in the Giro d'Italia before the Tour, which will allow him to arrive in excellent condition. Doing both the Tour and the Giro is an excellent idea. He'll arrive in July in form with the necessary stamina for 3 weeks of racing." So this is pretty amazing. You get these two Tour powerhouses, Lance Armstrong and Eddy Merckx, both from different generations, both avid Tour watchers now that they're not riding, and both saying that Jan Ulrich has the best chance of winning this year's Tour. So we'll see how that goes for Jan this year. And speaking of Lance Armstrong, last week the Discovery Channel team unveiled its 2006 post-Lance Armstrong lineup. Included on the team are key returning riders George Hincapie, who won a mountain stage of last year's Tour de France and has been a strong supporter and key riding partner for Lance Armstrong for the past few years. Also on the team is Tom Danielson, winner of the Tour de Georgia, and 8th place overall at last year's Tour de Spain. Other members of the 27-man team include Vyacheslav Ekimov of Russia. He's a 14-time Tour de France finisher and also an Athens Olympic medalist. Also on the team, Paolo Salvadelli of Italy, the 2005 Tour of Italy winner, and Yaroslav Popovich of the Ukraine, who won Best Young Rider at the 2005 Tour de France. Of course, we all know that Lance retired last year after winning his 7th straight Tour de France, but he says that he's going to remain involved with the squad. And, of course, he put his full support behind the team and Director Sportif Johan Bruneel. You'll be able to get your first real look at the Discovery squad coming up in a few weeks at the Amgen Tour of California. I've been talking about that a lot on the Fredcast. And it's going to be great not only to see stage racing come to the West Coast, but also to see how the Discovery Channel team's going to do this year without Lance on the team. Okay, and in my last bit of Lance Armstrong, or at least Lance Armstrong-related news of the day, bring you the story of Bodie Miller. Bodie Miller is an Olympic skier on the United States ski team, and he was recently interviewed in Rolling Stone magazine. And at least for me, I don't know what it is about Rolling Stone. What is it that makes people, when they go talk to Rolling Stone, just go crazy? Here's Bodie Miller. He's getting ready for the Olympics in Turin coming up in a couple of weeks. And this is a guy who's not really shy about publicity. He's being interviewed, and they start asking him about drug use in sports. And basically, he accuses Barry Bonds and our old friend Lance Armstrong of using banned substances. And he says, quote, "Right now, if you want to cheat, you can." He says, quote, quoting again, "Barry Bonds and those guys are just knowingly cheating, but there's all sorts of loopholes. If you say it has to be knowingly using drugs, you do what Lance Armstrong and all those guys do, where every morning their doctor gives them a box of pills and they don't ask anything, they just take the pills. Yeah, they're not knowingly taking any substances, they don't ask what it is, but they're sure taking it." So here's this guy basically saying, Lance told his doctors, "I'm going to close my eyes, give me whatever you want, and then I can say I didn't know I was taking drugs." How does Bodie Miller know what Lance Armstrong is doing halfway across the world in a sport that Bodie Miller knows nothing about, or at least, you know, hasn't participated in. Now, here's my opinion, and folks, this is definitely commentary. If we were on TV, it would say commentary underneath my head. But there's no doubt about the fact that Bodie Miller is a great skier. He's currently fourth in international standings. But he's got a big international event coming up. The Olympics doesn't get any bigger than that. He's there to represent his country. And quite frankly, I don't think now is the time for him to be making wild accusations about other American athletes. Instead, he should be focusing on his game. He should be really waving the flag for the United States and for U.S. athletes. So you know what, Bodie? Right now, just do us all a favor. Shut up and ski. Okay, and here's a story that either represents the height of chutzpah or the depths of stupidity. There's a guy in Colorado Springs by the name of William Reese Houghton. Houghton's 32 years old now, but he started working for Colorado Cyclists when he was 17 as a warehouse worker. Over the years, he worked his way up and in the ranks at Colorado Cyclist, and he has now been charged with stealing over $70,000 worth of bikes, parts, and accessories from Colorado Cyclist and selling them, yep, you guessed it, on eBay. He got fired from Colorado Cyclist, and actually Colorado Cyclist didn't actually file any charges against him. And after he left Colorado Cyclist, he finds a friend who he convinces to help him open up a bike shop. He opens up the bike shop in Colorado, Colorado Springs to be exact, and it's called Pro Cycling. He opened it up in April 2003. Almost immediately after opening the shop, he began selling stolen items online. Now, between September 2003 and September 2005, Houghton posted 525 items for sale on eBay and sold 361 of them. He made $147,605 selling the goods, often below retail price, and he was using the shop's FedEx account to ship the items to all of the buyers on eBay. Another employee, Michael Joe Kelty, who's 35, is a friend of Houghton's and a former co-worker from Colorado Cyclist, was also arrested along with Houghton. They are currently charged with stealing over $375,000 worth of items. They're currently free on bail. If Houghton's convicted, he could face more than 18 years in prison, and Kelty could face more than 10 years in prison. So, folks, when you find that deal on eBay and it looks too good to be true and the price is way lower than you ever expected, especially if you see that it's somebody who's selling item after item below a reasonable retail price, you need to get a little bit suspicious because it's quite possible that you're receiving stolen goods. Now, in this case, I don't think police are talking about charging any of the buyers, but still, you know, when you go online and you start buying stuff and the prices look too good to be true, they probably are, and caveat emptor would apply. Okay, this next story is going to be interactive, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to take your right arm and put it out in front of you where you can see it. Take your left arm and do the same thing. And now I want you to look at your wrists. Go ahead, do it. I'll wait. Okay, great. Now you can put your arms down. Chances are when you looked at your wrists, one of them, especially if you're Fred, one of those wrists had a yellow rubber bracelet around it that said Live Strong. Now I know on my wrist, I have a Live Strong band, and then I have another band that's red, and it says Hope. It's called an MS band of Hope. It's from the National MS Society, because as you know, if you listen to one of my early podcasts, somebody very close to me has MS, and I ride every year in one of the MS-150s here in Southern California and try to raise as much money as I can in the fight against that disease. I've had these bands around my wrist for, wow, close to 2 years now, and I still wear them. So why am I mentioning this? Why did I make you do that interactive bit there? Well, I'm mentioning it because there was a very interesting article that showed up in the Christian Science Monitor last week, which is not normally a newspaper that I read, but it was picked up by a number of other outlets, and that's where I found it. And it was written by a gentleman by the name of Brad Rourke, who's a consultant who works on ethics and civic issues. And the point of his article was this. Years ago, there was the AIDS ribbon. Everybody remembers you'd watch the Oscars or the Emmys, and all the stars would get up there, and every single one of them had that red ribbon on their chest. And after the AIDS ribbon came the Livestrong bracelet, and undoubtedly, it was a stroke of genius, because overnight, The Lance Armstrong Foundation made millions and millions of dollars as everybody tried to hop on the bandwagon and get those yellow bracelets. And you probably remember a time when they were scarce and you couldn't buy them anywhere. And you ordered them online and you probably had to wait a couple of weeks for them to arrive in the mail. And pretty soon, organization after organization came out with their bracelets. Personally, like I said, I've got two on my wrist, one for Livestrong and one for the National MS Society. And both of those are noble causes, as were the ones for breast cancer and the other issues that were really noble causes that had the bracelets. But pretty soon it got usurped. There were, I remember seeing in Los Angeles, LA Dodgers bracelets, and there were California Angels bracelets. And I remember seeing even the Jimmy Buffett fans got on the bandwagon, and there's a Fins Up bracelet for all you parrot heads out there. And then really, these bracelets just, they were no longer trendy, and because the message had been so muddied by all of these trivial, if you will, reasons for wearing them, that pretty soon people stopped wearing them. And then they went to these little magnetic ribbons on the back of people's cars that started with, "Support our troops," and now I've even seen ones that say things like, "Love your dog," or "I love my dog." The point of the article was this. Things like the AIDS ribbon, things like the Lance Armstrong bracelet definitely had their place, but unfortunately they become a fad and they fade and they're really no longer useful as a tool of awareness and increasing awareness. And so the author is saying he's got a drawer full of multicolored bracelets, doesn't even know what they're all for, and he'll probably never wear them again. But what I've noticed is cyclists continue to wear them. When I do centuries and when I'm out just training and I run across other cyclists, more often than not, they've still got that yellow Livestrong band. And my personal opinion is that when you still see people wearing them today, it probably has even more of an impact than it did at the height of all these rubber bands' popularity. And that is because people who are still wearing them, whether it's a Livestrong or an MS band or quite frankly, even that parrot head bracelet. These are people who are very passionate about the cause, and their desire to continue wearing those bracelets says something about their devotion to that cause. So whether they're cool or not, whether they're in, whether they're out, if it's something that you find important, and I personally find importance in the two that I wear, I say go ahead and wear them. Just because the kids aren't wearing them doesn't mean that we can't continue to show our passion for causes that we care about. Okay, the 2006 Tour de France is still months away, but they're already planning out the 2007 route, and it was announced this week that the 2007 Tour de France is going to begin, not in France, but in England, and actually in London. Now, this is the third time that the tour has visited England, but this is the first time that it's actually gone into London, into the capital of England. London's actually hosting two stages. The first will be a prologue in the city center on the 7th of July, and the second starting in London before heading south through Kent. Now, they haven't finalized the route yet, but they're saying that it's going to include landmarks such as Buckingham Palace and Trafalgar Square. I think it's pretty cool. It's maybe called the Tour de France, but as the EU has really unified and come together, I think it's fantastic that two traditional historical rivals like France and England are going to come together and that the tour is going to begin in England. So for all of those of you who are listeners in England, get ready. The tour's coming your way. Okay, and speaking of routes for famous bicycle rides, one of this country's most famous bicycle rides is the Register's annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa. This is put on by the Des Moines Register every year, and it is a multi-day event that takes cyclists from one end of Iowa to the next. And the route was announced this week, and you can find it at www.ragbrai.com, RAGBRAI.com, and there's a link in the show notes. Basically, it's going to begin on July the 23rd in Sergeant Bluff, Iowa, and end on July the 29th in Muscatine. Overnight stops are in Ida Grove, Audubon, Waukee, Newton, Marengo, and Coralville. Now, the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa is 444 miles this year, And the organizers say that Sergeant Bluff, Waukee, and Marengo have never hosted an overnight stop before. This is one of those rides that I definitely have to do before I die. I have a friend who has done Ragbri before, and he said it is challenging, it is fun, it's a party every night, that the camaraderie and the community is just fantastic, and it's just a really great event to take part in every summer. So if you're in or around Iowa and you're a Fred, or you're just somebody who likes to do long rides, this is definitely one for you. Go to the show notes, check it out, sign up, and just enjoy. And if you do it, just like any of these other rides that I've mentioned before, please tell us about it here on the Fredcast. We would love to have you out there as a roving reporter, or a rolling reporter, as it were, so that we can get a few ride reports for some of these great rides around the country. And this is definitely one of the great rides around the country. Okay, and a new product was announced this week. This one's from Reese Racing, and I've put a link in the show notes, as always. And this is a product that they're calling the Mork Mount. It's a handlebar mount for the iPod Nano. It's CNC machined. It's an aluminum cradle. It's powder coated, and it mounts your iPod Nano to the handlebars of your bike. Now, I talked in the last show, or one of the last shows, about riding with your iPod, so make sure you listen to that show, and especially check up on your local laws as to whether or not this is legal. But this is really great, because I know a lot of people, like myself, I ride with my iPod in my jersey pocket, and so if I want to change the volume, or skip a song, or change to a different playlist, I pretty much have to stop and take it out of my pocket and look at it. But here, this will mount your iPod Nano right to your handlebars. Looks like a really cool product. It's only 53 grams, and it goes for $39.95. So if you've got an iPod Nano and you like to ride with it on your bike, this might be the product for you. Head on over to Reese Racing's website and check it out. Okay, in our quirky news story of the week, I'm going to bring you the story of rocket designer Tim Pickens. Now, before I do, I want to remind you about one of my definitions of what a Fred is. I told you that a Fred is somebody who likes to have the latest gadgets and gizmos on his or her bike. Well, Mr. Pickens is definitely a Fred. You see, he's a rocket designer. He owns a company called Orion Propulsion. He says, before I tell you what he did, he says, at heart, we're a bunch of guys wanting to go to space and we can't afford it. He says, so basically, the things that he designs are his own subscale space program. Now, Pickens, who's the president of, as I said, rocket design firm Orion Propulsion, created a rocket bike. That's right, a rocket bike. The rocket bike employs the same hybrid rocket technology as the suborbital rocket plane, Spaceship One, whose propulsion system Pickens helped design. Now, Spaceship One is the rocket that went into space, or rocket plane that went into space last year to win the coveted X Prize. And in this case, in place of normal rocket fuel, the bike that he designed uses ordinary roofing tar. So he took a rocket, he strapped it to the back of a bike, and to ignite it, he placed a model rocket motor inside the engine. Here's how it works. He has a toggle switch on the battery pack, and that arms the ignition system. The left thumb button sends, now for most of us, you know, the left thumb button either shifts up or down. Listen to what his does. The left thumb button sends power from the battery pack to an igniter on a model rocket motor inside the rocket engine, vaporizing the roofing tar fuel so that it can burn. The right thumb button, again, his is cooler than ours, keeps the nitrous oxide flowing and the rocket lit as long as it's pushed. And then the left brake lever regulates the flow of nitrous oxide and throttles the rocket. You got to see the picture. And I've put a link to Orion Propulsion's website in the show notes so you can see a picture. It kind of reminds me of the last century I did when we got to the 50-mile mark where we were supposed to turn around, they had lunch. And, you know, normally it's peanut butter and jelly or turkey sandwiches or something like that. At this century, they had chili. That was your lunch. And I remember watching the people on the course, and you could tell the ones who had had the chili and the ones who didn't have the chili. Go to Orion Propulsion's website, take a look at the picture of the rocket bike, and tell me you don't think that that guy looks like he had the chili at the 50-mile mark. Okay, and that's going to do it for the news tonight. Next up, I want to talk to you a little bit about something that a listener emailed me about. And the listener's name is Chris, and he's in Los Angeles. And he was telling me that he's getting ready to go for his first century. He and a buddy have recently taken up cycling as something that they want to do every single day or as often as possible. And they're writing about it on their blog. And I've put a link in the show notes to Chris's blog. And he also has a podcast of his own. So Chris sent me an email, and he told me that he was thinking about training for and riding his first century, and he asked me for some tips, and I gave him a couple, and then he said to me, hey, this would be a great topic for the Fredcast. So, Chris, thanks for the idea. I agree. So get ready for the Fredcast Guide to Training for and Riding Your First Century, and that's exactly the way I'm going to present it. It's going to be a two-part series on how to prepare and train, and then the second part will be on the days leading up to and actually riding your first century. So let's get down to it. Very first thing you need to do, look a couple of months in advance from when you're going to start training and pick your event, because you need to have a goal. If you've got a goal, you can work backwards in your training from today, and you can really fine-tune your training to make sure that you're as prepared as possible for that event. Don't find one next month if you haven't been riding enough, but look for one out into April or May. Now, what should you look for when you choose your first century, and how do you find it? Well, first of all, and this may seem like common sense, but go for an organized event instead of just saying, oh, on May 20th, I'm going to go ride 100 miles. That's a bad idea. If it's your first century, you definitely want it to be an organized event, because at these events, you're going to have the support of volunteers and professionals for really any need that might arise. When you do an organized event, every anywhere from 15 to 25 miles, there's going to be rest stops. And at those rest stops, you're going to be able to find bathrooms. You're going to be able to find food. You're going to be able to find hydration, first aid, bike mechanics. So there's no reason that your first century should be solo. There's no reason why you should be out there on your own trying to find a 7-Eleven or a Quickie Mart where you're going to be able to buy some Gatorade or some water to keep you going. Another reason to ride an organized event is because you've got the camaraderie of other riders. All of you are working toward the same goal, and that is finishing safely. So the great thing about that is you've got people to talk to take your mind off whatever pain you may be having. You've got people who you might be able to draft off of, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a little while. But definitely, you've got the support and you've got the camaraderie. Definitely do an organized event. So how do you find one? Well, there's two websites that are fairly new, which are pretty good at helping you find organized rides, and those are centuryrides.com and bikecenturies.com. And don't worry if you haven't written this down, it's in the show notes. You can go to thefredcast.com, click on the show notes for show number 5, and you'll be able to find these two links, and you can click on them. So what do you look for in that first century? Well, again, this may seem like common sense, but go for one with as little elevation gain as possible. Now listen, there are plenty of rides out there for very, very experienced century riders, and they've got names like Death and Breathless and Agony. That's not the one you should choose for your first century. Instead, choose ones with as little elevation gain as possible. And typically, when you go to the websites for these rides, they'll usually tell you how much elevation gain is involved, or they'll show you an elevation chart, and it's pretty easy to see which ones you shouldn't do for your first century. So definitely go for flatter ones. It's going to be impossible to do a completely flat century where you just have zero elevation gain. The world just isn't flat. Sorry, Christopher Columbus, it just isn't so. So look for ones with as little elevation gain as possible. I think that that's enough said. So now you've got your century. You need to start training. But whoa, put the brakes on for a second. The next thing that you need to do is you need to make sure that you have the right bike. Now, I've seen people riding centuries on a wide variety of bikes. High-end carbon and titanium road bikes, dual suspension mountain bikes, single-speed track bikes, often without brakes. Those guys are the real hardcore century riders. Tandems and mortems. I've seen them on folding bikes, scooters, beach cruisers. I've even seen people doing them on rollerblades, although I don't recommend it. There's no doubt in my mind, that riding a Century with a lightweight road bike with lots of gears and narrow tires is going to be way easier for you. But at the same time, if your budget isn't going to allow you to go out and buy a new bike right now, then you can't do it. So let me give you a couple of tips and some things to keep in mind to make sure that your bike won't keep you from having a good first Century experience. First and foremost, take your bike to your local shop and have it thoroughly checked out. Tell them you want a tune-up. Tell them you're getting ready to ride a Century, and they'll know that you're serious, and they'll make sure that your bike is in tip-top shape. Now, if you have a mountain bike, for instance, most mountain bikes come with knobby tires. Knobby tires have a very high rolling resistance. That simply means it's going to take you more work to get that bike moving. So the first thing that you're going to want to do is check out those tires. If you've got knobby tires, take them off and get some slick tires. And your bike shop will definitely have a variety of those. Get some slick tires and definitely get narrower tires. A lot of mountain bikes come with 2 1/4 inch wide tires. That's going to be too wide because, again, that's going to give you a higher rolling resistance. So narrower, slicker tires are the first thing that you definitely want to check out because it's going to make your ride a lot easier. The next thing, and again, one of those common sense things, but you definitely have to mention it, the last time you were on your bike, maybe you went for a short ride, how did your rear end feel? Well, if it didn't feel that great, you might want to look at getting a cushier or more comfortable saddle for your Century. Because if you're going to ride a Century, your first Century, you may be on that bike anywhere from 6 to 8 hours. If you're going to be sitting on a seat that hurts you after 15 or 20 minutes, you don't want to be sitting on it after 6 or 8 hours. Your body, your rear end will thank you for doing a little bit of research and finding the right saddle that's going to be just right for 6 or 8 hours of sitting. Next, I want you to look at shoes. Now, you don't necessarily, if you're not comfortable, you don't necessarily have to ride with clipless pedals. Although, as you become a more accomplished rider, I think you're going to want to because you're going to find that you're going to be able to get more power into your pedal stroke, both on the downstroke and the upstroke, with clipless pedals. But you don't have to do that right now. What you do need are cycling-specific shoes. You see, cycling-specific shoes are going to be stiffer on the bottoms and are going to make sure that you're not wasting any effort and that, you know, you're using your full muscle power into that pedal stroke. So take a look at getting some cycling shoes. Next, riding a Century involves the loss of a lot of liquid through perspiration, and so you definitely have to stay hydrated. Make sure you have good water bottle cages on your bike, and make sure that you have the largest water bottles that will fit in those cages. And if not, you might even consider a hydration pack. Now, most Freds will tell you that it's not cool to ride your road bike with a Camelback or a hydration pack. And admittedly, I don't ride with one either. But it is probably the best way to make sure that you stay hydrated because you're able to carry a lot more liquid than you would in water bottles. And because that straw is hanging over your shoulder, you're much more likely to take drinks more often, especially if you're not real confident reaching down and grabbing that water bottle. So if you want to go for water bottles, make sure you have enough on your bike. Or if you want to go the hydration pack route, either way, the most important thing is that you have a way to stay hydrated when you're out there on the Century. Next, you want to make sure that you have a good toolkit, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that in part two of this podcast, so keep that in mind. And finally, you want to make sure that you have the proper clothes. And again, that's something that I'm going to be talking about in part two. So check out your bike, make sure that it's up to the task, and make sure that it's well-equipped and that you are well-equipped for the task. Now, the next thing is you want to make sure that your bike fits properly. Now, that's not to say that it's the right bike size for your height. It's, is it properly adjusted for your body? You see, it's one thing, again, to ride your bike 10 or 15 miles, and it's another to ride 100. After you get close to that 100 miles, you're going to find that just the tiniest of adjustments on your bike can either make you feel awful at the end of 100 miles or can make you feel great at the end of 100 miles. So while you're in there at the bike shop, ask them whether or not they can professionally fit you. And the professional fit will include everything from, is your handlebar the right height? Is your stem the right length? Is your seat post the right height? Is your saddle as far forward as it needs to be or as far back as it needs to be? So you can see there's a lot of tiny little adjustments, and even a millimeter, a centimeter can make a difference in the comfort on your bike. So make sure that your bike fits you properly. Next, it's time to get down to training. Your bike fits you. It's well outfitted. It's got all the right parts on it for a century. Now it's time for training. Now, there was a great article in Bicycling Magazine a few years ago about how to train for a century. And the article included, I think it was about a 10-week day-by-day training schedule to get you from being a casual rider to a century rider. The schedule included, I remember, how many miles each day that you needed to ride. It told you the pace of each day's ride and the days on which you should just stay home to rest and recover, because rest and recovery is oftentimes as important as the longest day on a bike. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't able to find the official version of that schedule online, but I was able to find a number of reproductions of it. So since I don't want to infringe on anyone's copyrighted material, I'm not going to link to it in the show notes. But trust me, if you were able to find this podcast, then I'm sure that you know how to use Google. It was Bicycling Magazine, and it was How to Train for a Century. So go out and look for it and find that chart, because I think that you're going to find that it's going to be very helpful to you in designing your training program. Okay, so although I didn't find the exact training schedule, what I can tell you is that even if you haven't ridden your bike for more than 5 miles at a time, you can train for and ride a century. And I really think that you can do it within 10 weeks. Now, when I trained for my first century, I didn't use a training schedule. I didn't use a magazine article. I just got on my bike and rode nearly every single day for several months. And here's what I learned. First, and this is important, there is no need, and I don't think you ever should, ride 100 miles before your big event. Now, the conventional wisdom is that if you can consistently ride 1/2 to 2/3 of your longest distance, then you can actually do that longest distance. So let's say, for instance, you're going to do a century. If you can consistently ride anywhere from 50 to 65 miles, you really are going to be okay. So I've already told you that you need to choose an event far enough in the future to allow you to get in shape, and that you need to have a bike that's equipped to handle riding 100 miles on pavement. Now we need to get your body in shape to handle riding a century, and to get you used to being on the bike for 5, 6, or more hours. So how do you get to the point where you can consistently ride that 50 to 65 miles? First, you need to do at least one long ride every week. Now, obviously you're going to want to do that on a Saturday or Sunday or whatever your days off are. Now, right now that long ride might only be 10, 15, or 20 miles for you, because maybe you haven't done a really long ride so far. Don't worry about that. Everyone starts someplace. Over the weeks to come, you're going to slowly ramp up to 50 to 65 miles at the end of your 10 weeks, not at the beginning. And you're going to do that by maybe adding 5 or 10 miles to your long ride every week. So again, if this week you do 20, maybe next week you do 25 or 30. And then the following week, maybe you do 30 or 35, and so on, until you're able to really ramp up your mileage to be able to do consistently long rides of 50 to 65 miles once a week. Now, besides your long ride, you should do at least one short, high-energy ride every week. Now, to do this, you're going to want to stretch and warm up for maybe 10 or 20 minutes, and then do about 20 or 30 minutes of high-speed riding, followed by another 10 to 20 minutes of cool-down. Now, your high-speed riding, what am I talking about there? High cadence, high speed, in control, but really getting your heart rate up there so that you know that you can really work that aerobic system of your body. And if you don't want to do an extended amount of high speed work, then you can do intervals. And there's plenty of places online where you can learn about intervals. And that's the kind of training that I'm doing right now, where every day I have different intervals that I'm doing in order to work my aerobic system up to do my long ride, because I'm working up to do a double century this year. Now, the rest of your week, you've got your one short high-energy ride, and then you've got your one long ride every week. The rest of your week should consist of relatively short rides, and each of those should have varying terrain, and the rides should get progressively longer each week. Start out with rides of 30 to 60 minutes. That's really all that you need to start with as you start your training program. But one of the most important things that I've learned is don't do the same ride every day. Otherwise, you're going to get bored and you're going to give up. And don't forget to give yourself at least one day off each week, along with one recovery ride. And my recommendation for a recovery ride is that, let's say on Sunday you do your long ride. Then on Monday, you should do a short recovery ride where you're not getting your heart rate up very high at all. You're just out there doing a nice, easy spin, working out your muscles, working out the kinks that you may have developed the day before, or just working out the soreness from your muscles. Remember, keep the heart rate low. Your cadence doesn't have to be too high. Your recovery ride should just be a nice, easy spin. Now, within a week or two of your actual event, you should be able to complete a ride of, as I said, anywhere from 50 to 65 miles without any problems. Some people are going to recommend that you do a back-to-back 50 miles, so that on a Saturday you do 50 miles, and on a Sunday you do 50 miles. And they recommend that you do this 1 or 2 weeks before your actual century. And they say that you should do this so you get used to knowing how your body's going to feel when it's fatigued. Because imagine if Saturday you did 50, and then on Sunday you're doing 50, somewhere around mile 20 or 25, you're not going to feel quite as good as you did at mile 20 or 25 on Saturday. And so it's a way for you and your body to sort of get used to what it feels like to have a little bit of fatigue, so that when you start doing the century and you get toward mile 60, 70, you really know how to deal with the way that your body is feeling. Personally, I've never done it, but I've seen people recommend it. Do what works for you. Now, as you're doing this, one of the things that I definitely recommend is that you keep a journal. And whether you do that on a spreadsheet program or a database program, you actually write by hand. No matter what you do, keep a journal. And every day, write down how many miles you rode. Write down your route. Write down how you felt. If you've got a heart rate monitor and you're monitoring your heart rate, write down what your maximum was and what your average heart rate was. Maybe a little bit about the weather. And then how were you feeling after that ride and during the ride? And at what point were you feeling great? What point weren't you feeling great? Because as the weeks progress, you're going to want to look back at this, not just to give yourself some motivation so that you learn how much better you're feeling and that you want to really strive to do better. But you want to be able to go back and you want to compare how you're feeling today to how you were feeling yesterday. And then after you finish your century and you start training for your next one, and maybe next year you say, gee, was I really feeling this awful at this point last year? You can go back to that ride log and you can look at it and you can say, yeah, I was. So this really isn't unusual for me. So it's a great baseline for you to create for your cycling training now and in the future. Okay, so you've done all your training. Your bike is ready. Your clothes are ready. You're ready to do your century. Be sure to listen next week, and I'm going to bring you part two, during which I'm going to tell you what to do the days just before your century, what to do and expect the day of, and the day following the century. In the meantime, if you have any questions or comments about this topic or any of the things I've mentioned about preparing for your first century, please let me know. I'll be happy to answer your questions on the podcast or share your comments with the rest of the listeners. Okay, so last week I mentioned to you that there was somebody out there who wanted to start a podcast and call it Fredcast instead of The Fredcast, as mine is called. And I asked you for your opinion on that, whether you thought I should pay his crazy price for his domain name or just ignore him and go about doing what we're doing. And I got an overwhelming response. I want to thank all of you who emailed me and sent me voicemails on this. And overwhelmingly, you all said, forget about him. Don't pay his crazy price. Continue to call it The Fredcast because we love it. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. So onward and upward, and we're just going to ignore that guy and let him do his uncool thing of starting a podcast called Fredcast. That's crazy. Don't know whether or not it's legal or ethical, but I'll leave that up to him. Okay, also, I want to welcome some new listeners to the show. There is a great podcast out there by a gentleman by the name of Adam Christensen, and Adam created a podcast called the MacCast, and I've put a link in the show notes. And if you are a Mac user, or as he calls you, a Mac geek, this is the podcast for you. It tells you all about the latest information in the Macintosh community. And the reason I bring it up is because last week I sent an audio comment to Adam at the MacCast, and he played it on the MacCast, and it was about Garmin supporting the Mac, and it was also about something about the new Macintosh laptops. He played it, and he allowed me to plug my show, and from emails that I've gotten from several people out there, we've gained some new listeners as a result. So if you're interested in hearing that audio comment, it was on the January 24th show of the MacCast. And to those of you out there that are Mac geeks and also Freds, welcome to the show. Okay, it's time for the shout-outs. Got a couple of shout-outs to go out this week to a number of people who sent me some really great emails and voicemails. Bill in Santa Fe, Chris in Los Angeles, who I mentioned is going for his first century, and I put a link in the show notes to his website. Greg G, Bob in Massachusetts, and Bob, thank you for sending me the photo of your bike. It is a really, really cool bike, and it reminds me, I really have to put a photo of my bike on the website because a lot of you are asking to see my bike and to know how it's outfitted. Shout out to Bobby, Noreen in Portland, Karen in North Carolina, Mark from Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, John in San Ramon, California. Oh, and by the way, John had a tip for all of you out there. He says that he apparently has to ride in the rain a lot. And one of the things that he does is there's a product out there called Rain-X, and it's for windshields, and it allows rain to just sheet off the windshield instead of having to use your windshield wipers. And he says he coats his cycling glasses with Rain-X so that if he gets stuck in the rain, he can still see. So that, I thought that was a great tip. And then finally, shout out goes to Sean in Dallas. And Sean wants to know what bike I ride. And I, like I said, I'm going to have to post a picture on the website and you can see for yourself. So thanks again to everybody who's contacted me over the last week or so. I really, really love getting your emails and your voicemails. And I love the fact that you love the Fredcast. Now, speaking of that, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor and something I haven't done before. Two things. Number one, tell your friends about the Fredcast. I really want to see if we can boost our listenership a little bit more. So if you're out there riding and you're talking to your friends, and I'd really appreciate it if you mentioned the Fredcast and tell them to give it a listen. Hopefully they'll become subscribers just like you. And I'd also like you to go to Podcast Alley. If you're not familiar with Podcast Alley, it is probably the internet's largest repository for podcast information. And they have a feature where you can vote for your favorite podcast. And I've put a link in the show notes to how you can vote for the Fredcast, because I'd really like to see if we can gain some new listeners through Podcast Alley as well. So I really would appreciate it if you would do that for me. And as always, let you know how to contact me at the Fredcast. First and foremost, I have put a Frapper map on the website, and you can find it on the left side of the website. If you click there, it'll take you to another site where you can put in your location so that we can start seeing where all of our Fredcast listeners are located. And a couple of you have already done that, and I appreciate it. Hope the rest of you will go out there and do that as well. You can also send me an email anytime, and the email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. You can send me a voicemail, and the voicemail number is area code 206-203-FRED. That's 206-203-FRED. Love getting your audio comments. You can send those to the email at thefredcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can go to the website at www.thefredcast.com. Tonight's PodSafe Cycling music is by Bob Kirkpatrick from Top Cat Records. The song is called Born in Louisiana. So once again, as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. Enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
goodbye.